This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
The idea for this class is that most of you, every year, encounter a student that you struggle with. For most of you, when I said that child, for those of you that have taught before, you thought of one, typically. Sometimes five. So it's just a reality of our schools. It's a reality of every school. I taught in public schools too. It's maybe even more a reality there. So there are kids in our class that make a struggle. One of the things in my titling this, how many of your students aren't perfect? How many?
How many? All of them.
All of them, right? How many of their teachers are perfect?
None.
None, right? So X where X equals all students, and X where or Y where all teachers equal Y, right? So none of us are perfect. There's a continuum, and each of us kind of have that point where it's a little much for us. And I can tell you probably already that my point is way off in the misbehavior side, because I've lived with it for so long. I can deal with stuff that some people can't. Putting up with imperfection is a skill that you learn over time. So, yeah, keep that. Keep that in mind as we go through what we're talking about, that we're all imperfect, we're on a continuum, and at some point we get too far, and we want to talk about knowing about that point a little bit. So just to tell you about me, I'll tell you about me, and then I want to know a little bit about you. So I have been involved in a lot of different settings and not any of them very long. So I've taught in a Christian school for 4 years. Some of you have got me beat by a lot. I've worked at Bald Eagle Boys Camp. How many of you know about Bald Eagle Boys Camp? Or one of the boys camps around the world? That's most of you. I was there as a counselor. I have taught in public schools as a special ed / math teacher. That was 3 years. And most recently, I am involved in administrating a daycare. So I'm back at the bottom, youngest end of that. So I have a lot of little not real long time in a lot of areas. So I've seen a lot of things, but I don't have a lot of answers. And the more I see, the less I have of answers. So if you came for answers today, I've saved you time. There's the door. However, together, we can help each other work towards answers. We can help each other make progress in understanding what we need to do to move forward, not to solve a problem, to move forward. Okay. So, yeah, I think I gave you most of my outlook there. I also am not a fan of labels. I studied all the labels and then forgot them as quickly as I could after the test was done. That's me personally. Some of you really like the labels and that helps you. That's just understand that I am not that person, okay? I can appreciate if the labels and some of the descriptions and that kind of thing help you, that's fine. I can try to talk in those manners, but just as a person, I see so many complex factors in each child that a label is really hard for me just to use. So a couple details here from you. Now, how many years have you taught? If you, like Jonas, are over 10, just put up 10, that works. But how many fingers, how many years have you taught? This is a zero, yeah, for those of you that might be there,
which is great.
This is a good mix, okay. I figured it might be a bit of a mix. And why is it a mix? Because we all have these kids. I don't care who you are. that, yeah, we just have these imperfect students. All of them. How many,
well, I already asked you this, how many imperfect students will be in your kid, in your class next year?
How many of you, actually just use your fingers, again, you shouldn't need over one hand. Think of the kids that you're afraid are going to cause you stress next year. How many is that? Don't use over one hand.
All right. Well, thankfully, none of you are over three. I don't, or did I miss somebody? I think it was none over three. Did you have a four? Okay. I was thinking almost I saw four over here somewhere. Okay. So, sorry. Three's a lot. A number of you had three. Three's a lot. Emotionally for you. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So let's try to get you some help on those three. So I'm just going to take some time, give you some time to write this down on the cards. I'll go over what I'd like again. As you write stuff down, clarity and honesty are the things that help you and me and us most, okay? Write something down. I'll pick these up here in a little bit. What we're doing is looking at your scenario, I'm calling it, and talking about strategies and resources we can use them. So I talked, as you're writing, I'll try to say some semi-important things. I talked about how honesty on here is important. Honesty with your child that causes you stress, honesty with his family, honesty with your administration is some of the best things you can do to help. So you're practicing that now. And some of you guys are writing a whole book. Feel bad I'm not going to get all of them answered. I appreciate that. I do. Wish we could solve all problems. But this is an exercise for you as much as it is for me.
Okay, so I'm going to just, you can finish up what you need there. But I'm going to talk a little bit more. So just on my honesty kick. If we
don't have honesty and clarity on what the problem is, it's really hard to solve it. And sometimes, back to labeling disorders, sometimes it's really hard to pinpoint the problem. So just be as honest as you can with what's happening, right? I find that, yeah, like I said, I'm in administration, so I mostly work with parents at this point. It's hard for me to tell parents exactly what their children did, because it's not real nice, right? It's really hard to tell a parent that your child cheated on a test. It's really hard to tell your parent that your child is hitting others for no good reason. It's really hard to tell a parent that, and I'm making parent problems, that I messed up and did something to your child or told your child something that was not okay. Children aren't the only ones with the problems, right? And you know, that honesty is hard because pride, I guess. It's hard for me to, it's hard for me to talk about myself in a negative light. But it's also hard for me to talk about my kids in a negative light, right? I should be helping solve their problems. Some of you with more years under your belt know that too. Like, I should be able to deal with this situation. And I'm not getting anywhere, right? So that's a fact. And another thing I've been thinking about recently, I don't know how many of you know Lyndon Risser. I don't know why he's been drilling this into my head, but I think of him when I get this statement. He says this little phrase that honesty is kindness. Being really truthful is being really kind. And I've been thinking about that for a while. I'm not sure I totally agree, but I see the point. Sometimes it's more honest to say you have boogers sticking out of your nose than to just let you walk around with boogers sticking out of your nose, right? And I'm, that's a nice simple one, most of our problems are much uglier, honestly. So as I thought about what we can do, or what works to change and to address some of these, I'm calling them stressful situations, problematic situations. This is very anecdotal. This is me, right? And I said I don't like labels. Obviously, I don't like labels. The two things that matter, that I see affect change in kids the most, are care over time. And by that, I mean that you guys are always caring. You're not Jesus, but you're basically always caring. You wouldn't be in this class if you didn't care about your kids. Okay? So you do care about them. Being able to do that over time is huge. What got, I'm thinking specifically here maybe of behavioral types of things. What got that behavior in place? Where do you have them? In sixth grade at this point? You have a girl in third grade? How many years did it take to get there? Don't act like this year you're going to change it. You can maybe move the needle back a little, but you're not going to change all that created that problem to begin with. So, and I'll just use my experience at camp here for a second, because there we're dealing with the real problems. Can't be in school, it's juvenile detention or camp kind of type of problems. Those kids, we know they have some serious problems. Usually a year goes by before they make much change. You don't even have your students a year, some of you. Some of you only have them one grade. And so, yeah, they're in that high intensity, year round, 24 hours a day setting, a year just to get somewhere. And you guys are at 7 hours a day, 180 days a year. Totally different scenario, right? And then you lose them over the summer and stuff might go backwards. So, time. And some of you will have some of these children year after year. Part of my push for some of what I'll talk later is the fact that we need this length of time to undo what has happened. And so we need a team to do it, right? You need the teacher next year. You need to learn from the teacher before. And there needs to be some consistency throughout. And I'll talk about that team and how that can work out a little bit more later. The research, whatever. Research doesn't exist, almost, on this care over time thing. Because therapeutic session, there are settings, school settings, none of them are longer than about 9 months, 6 to 9 months. There is no research to speak of. Now there is, so this is very anecdotal. There is some research on the second thing here, that teachers are very impactful on their students. Not necessarily experienced teachers, that can help. For sure not college-trained teachers. I guess college-trained doesn't affect. It's more about teachers who can care. And I'm a Christian, so I can see a little bit where this is going. People that live like Jesus, right? People that live like Jesus affect the people around them, particularly their kids. And it doesn't necessarily happen fast. I don't know about you, but when Jesus is working on something with me, I take a while. Every now and then, something goes kind of fast because I see just how stupid I am. But usually, he has to build a really good case for me to change. And he does that time after time. And we look in the Old Testament, and you see these stories, cyclical. They were all on fire for God, and then a bit later, they were doing well, and then they kind of enjoyed that and chilled out. And it's God. Let's go have a party. Wait, our enemies are attacking. Hang on. We need God. Time after time, right? And that's me. Little cycles like that. And I say that because I think we need to be patient with our students as well. Give them the same level of grace you give yourself, if you want to say it that way. Being a teacher who cares over time is important. One of the most important things in almost all outcomes in your classroom. Now that's not quite, I can't snatch a piece of research that says that, but that's my personal opinion. Academic and social emotional. So there's a little bit more to that. I said teachers who are stable as well. Not just teachers, but teachers who are stable. And this is a growing concern of mine because several of you are starting your first year. Several of you are starting your second year. Some of you have done this for a while. And those of you that have done this for a while know that you really need to set limits for yourself and somehow not get too caught up in it. I'm going to validate those, your experienced people that know that, and also you people that are just starting out, realize that this is important. Be able to be a stable person. Don't get too attached to problems in your classroom. Don't let them define who you are. So if you can be a stable person, be Jesus over a while to your problems, I see that moving the needle the best. And it's a while. We like in our society to move forward quickly. We want the numbers now. We want change quickly, which is, I find interesting, because we want it for everything but ourselves. We kind of like to stay where we're at. So, when we think about how to solve these problems, which I'll come around and pick them up, two things came to mind. Well, one thing came to mind. Use your team. Teamwork is necessary. And that means sort of two things. One is use the resources you have available to you. And two is tell your team what's going on. So one is you asking for advice. The other one is telling people what they need to know to do their job. So, I've been in different settings, obviously. If my teachers don't tell me what's going on, I cannot help solve a problem. And so for you as teachers, please tell your principal or your board or whoever you are supposed to talk to what's going on. Feel free to ask for advice and that kind of thing. One of the most important things for a teacher that is stable is to realize that this is not your problem exclusively. Most of us make these our exclusive problem. Somehow I on my own can solve it. Some of you can relate with what I mean. You feel like you're not doing your job if you can't help this student succeed, either academically or emotionally or socially or that kind of thing. And so, please hear me. I have lots of reason for saying this. That student is not your problem to solve. Their behavior in class may continue to be bad, and that is just fine as long as you're using your resources and doing your part. You are only part of the team. You're not the whole problem-solving apparatus. I can tell you that in kind of two simple ways. One, most of you have been hired by someone. Do we have any school board members? I don't think we usually get those teachers. So, you've been hired by a school board, often. So they hired you to do a job, right?
That means they're in charge of making, of getting that job done. They hired you in place of them to get the job done, right? That was a little bit of an interesting logic, but like, they're hiring you to do this job. That means they think you can do an adequate job. That doesn't mean you're perfect. That just means they think you can do an adequate job. Second, how'd that kid get to school? Their parent chose to send them there. They did not need to. Granted, there's a lot of societal push for a variety of things, but there's another school. They could have homeschooled. They could have gone to public school. They could have, there's options, right? They did not have to go to your school. So you are in this situation because you're hired by a board that thought you were competent, and families entrusted you with this child, and that tells me that you're part of the equation. But there's at least two other parties that really care about the education of this child. Both the school board that has the school and the parents that sent the child. So the three group, the three of you, parents, school board, and school administration, and you share responsibility for all aspects of academic and behavior kind of problems. You understand that some with academics, you typically let the school board sort of set curriculum or at least ask them about that. Parents, if they fuss about your bit at something in your curriculum or how things go, or you know, you're willing to adjust curriculum typically to some degree. And the same is true, yeah, I think, of sort of behavior kind of things as well. So two passages in the Bible that I think we need to think about when we look at these stressful situations are one in Matthew 18, where we have the instruction to, well, whole of Matthew 18 is great to read in this scenario, but where you have someone you're having a problem with, talk to that someone, right? That's step one. Step two, get a bigger group. Step three, get an even bigger group and make sure something happens. So, great, exactly what I want you to do in a school setting. The other thing that plays in here, and this is one of my hobby horses, so my sister knows that. That's my sister, by the way. One of my hobby horses right now is John 17. And, well, there's a couple verses, but 21 to 23 probably. And they say this, that they all may be one, as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee. That they also may be one in us, that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. And the glory which thou gavest me, I have given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one, that again, the world may know that thou hast sent me, and hast loved them as thou hast loved me. As I read that, it sounds like we need to work together to show the world who Jesus is. So I think tough situations in our classroom are a great place to play that out. We don't do well on our own. We can do better as a team. We can show the world how to work on tough things as Christians in these scenarios. And most of the time, not necessarily all the world is looking in, but developing that in that classroom setting is going to also play out into different other settings in your church and in your community. So, now's when we move on to practical steps. You've heard my sermon. There's more, but you got more of it yesterday, too. Anyway, let's see. Does anybody have one that really should get hit? Like, you're not ready to start next year because of whatever this is. Okay. If you do and you didn't say it, talk to me after class. Okay. I really believe in using your team. We need to. Just need to. So, here's one. I'll just read this to you and then we'll talk about it. Okay. So, a small child that knows everything, or so they think, and likes to talk a lot. How do you help them be normal?
and not that they run the whole show. No, not that they run the whole show. The family may be a little dysfunctional. They tend to have to do things on their own at home. So again, I don't have an answer, right? How many of you kind of get that? This kind of know-it-all child. Just it's kind of a jerk in class, honestly. Their peers don't necessarily like them because they're sort of a class clown. I'm being really general here, but just so we can all think about someone like that. It sounds like home may not provide all the love and care maybe that it seems like this child needs, and so they're seeking attention at school. They probably do the same thing at home. That's normal. That one happens a lot. Almost every class has one of those kids in it. It may be a stressful level, or it may be a smaller level, but almost every class has that in it. So what do you do about it? Well, like I said, there's not an answer. I'd invite your thoughts here in just a second. I'm going to say a couple things, but if any of you have a comment on that, we're going to do that every time. If you have a comment and you want to add to these scenarios, go for it. So I'm just going to go back to kind of my framework of Matthew 18. I assume you already talked to the child about it. Right, once it gets to this level, it sounds like a child, you probably are going to have many conversations about how that wasn't appropriate actions. Here's one where it's really hard to talk to the family as well, because it sounds like maybe some of it came from home. Truth is, almost everything came from home or church in our schools, or at least in my belief of child development. You can ask Jonas, his is a little more... His child development scenario is a little better developed than mine, but we are somewhat of at least a product of where we came from, and it's just a fact. One thing in this scenario, and there's probably a bunch more in here, it's really easy to blame the family, right? It's the family's problem, and it maybe is. But where does blame get you? It's the family's problem. It doesn't work towards a solution very well. If it is a problem that we all would like to address, then we can get somewhere, right? And so here's a place where I think being honest with the family can help. What I would typically do in a scenario like that is when I work up the courage to talk to the family, I would ask something like, do you see this sort of behavior at home? Guess what the answer is? Almost always, yeah. And that's probably true for almost this entire stack. Start with that one. Do you see this behavior at home? What do you do about it at home? How do you feel like that's working? Who's in charge so far? Not really me. I did ask the questions, but so far I'm making the parent come up with all the answers. Now you can have two attitudes when you do that, and I do in different situations have one of the two attitudes. Sometimes I have my agenda and I'm trying to help the parent fall into it. Sometimes I'm humble enough that I don't have a solution and I want to know what the parent can help me with. And I've found that when I am able to listen to the parent in those kind of situations, they've lived with the child for quite a few years, and they do have some helpful hints. They don't have the whole perspective you do. They don't necessarily have the training you do or the experience you do, but they do have some helpful hints, no matter who they are. They may, our joke in a public school for special ed students is that they tend to reproduce, and so we struggle with working with their parents. But anyway, some of those parents actually have some helpful hints. They may not... They may be in the bottom 5% of the class, but they can have helpful hints. And so if you're able to listen to them, it's really good. I don't know if I want to go into this, but this is another one where I wish churches would work on that. Churches really should be the ones helping families rather than the school. Okay, let's go on to the next one. A dyslexic student
who struggles with being afraid he won't be able to do it, to grasp and achieve, handle the new concepts or rules. Very, very sensitive to whether I'm frustrated or whether I still believe in him. That one, some of the same answers apply, right? I mean, yeah, feedback. You guys answer that one. What are you thinking? So one of the things I'm seeing already in these two is two kids that need some love. And that's a lot of us. We all need some love. It's hard to keep believing in students sometimes, too. We want to. And usually that's almost good enough, honestly. It's almost good enough. And sometimes you do need to just fake it a little bit because you know that's what you want to do. And then, yeah, eventually it often comes back. It helps a lot when you have, you just wait till they all leave and then you think fondly of them after. When they're sitting right in front of you, sorry, you're not going to get there. When they all leave and you think about them, actually he kind of has this neat little trait, or oh, she's actually really good at that. That is cute. It helps, right? It doesn't solve problems, but it helps. Go.
I'm talking too much, but one thing that I've found very helpful is to sit in their desk when they're all gone and just pray for them and look at the classroom from their desk. Look at the classroom from their perspective. Just try to sit in their seat for a bit.
I think I've done that before, so. One of the other things with a student, with all students, but a student like this that has some particular struggle, like everyone else, they need to have some wins in life, what I'll call wins, where they know they got it. They did it right. And so you don't need to make them win every day. You don't have the time or the energy. But do once a week or so, try to make sure they win in some way, where they're the hero in the story. Sometimes takes some setting up, and sometimes I guess God sets it up for us and we fall into it. But if they can be the class champion, like somehow they solve the problem for the class, that's huge. Don't expect that every week. But if that can happen, that's great too. And sometimes you can set that up. You can tell them ahead of time where you're going with a lesson and work on it for a week ahead of time with them so they already know it when they're getting there. Again, you don't have time to do that regularly. But you can do that sometimes. This is for you and students. Don't put too much pressure on yourself or your students. God made us who he made us. We don't need to be anybody different. We like to see work getting done, get through those lessons, get those grades, whatever. And there's some good to that. There really is. But there's some push in our culture that I think is unhealthy in terms of that. Be okay with who you are and who their student is. Anything else on that one? When they're young enough, they don't mind it. You're right. But when they get somewhere not very high, suddenly they care. And none of us really like being singled out. I mean, think about it. Do you want to be the one standing up in front of church or something? Not really. All right. Uh-oh. He used the word I don't like. His sister is smarter. I don't like that word. His sister's smarter than he is and is passing him academically. I teach in an individualized, self-paced classroom where you can graduate before you're 18. Seems like he's reacting negatively to others. How he views himself. He bullies those smaller than himself. My sister and I graduated together. Right? Yeah. Yeah, me and my next sister. I didn't really think I was going to graduate because I just didn't care. So, I don't know who did this one, but it sounds like the point of stress has to do with feeling inferior a lot of times. And again, this is back to my imperfect people. That's all of us, right? This one is acting out a little more than some, probably, or wouldn't be a point of stress. But we all feel inferior, pretty regular. When Stephen walked in here, I felt inferior, right? Didn't I say that? Jonas, he walked out finally. Anyway. What do you think? Any thoughts there? The pat answer to feeling inferior is helping an individual know what they or who they are and what they're capable of. That's the pat answer. Making that happen is a little harder. Sometimes this one is a little easier to think in a physical sense. So take mountain climbing, for example. I don't know if any of you climb, but I don't. But if I was able to climb like one of the hard peaks, I would know something about myself that I don't currently know. True? I don't think I'm capable of it at this point. So can you help this student realize what he is capable of? Because we are all capable of a lot. I just said, you guys have the answers. That's true. All I'm doing is being a facilitator here. I can say lots of things, but you guys have the answers. You can help each other get through things. And so some of that is, okay, I'm back to, some of it just takes time figuring out what those things are that you can do and making that kid successful or just allowing that kid to be successful, whatever it is. But being sure to recognize it when they are. Make sure that you, and they know when you're not being honest. They know when you're just praising them for because you think you need to. But when they know they're successful and you tell them, hey, I saw you were successful, they'll believe it. And if not, rub it in. Say it the next day. And again. Any other thoughts on this one? I feel like that was almost an answer. It's not... This will take way longer than that to solve. And that one's a good one with siblings because, you know, we can't have those rivalries. I'm getting to where I'm okay with my sister, Rach, being actually a better administrator than me because she is. She's better at planning and organizing and pulling things off than me. And that's part of why she was caught up with me in school. The other part's because I'm who I am. I won't go into too much detail. Yeah. Different people have different strengths. Okay. IQ well below average. IQ is just a measure. Mine's well above average because I can cheat. Parents have unrealistic, delusional view of the child's abilities. Has a delightful personality, we can tend to become absorbed with one friendship at a time. I'm going to zero in there on the parents have unrealistic view of the child's abilities. Let's talk about that in specific. You can use the others as you're thinking, because that's a real common one. We have parents that my child, most of ours, won't necessarily become a doctor, but will be really good at school, right? My child, they're extraordinary. You hear that, especially some of you that teach younger grades hear that a lot. Oh, my child's extra. Please help them get, you know, where they need to go. And in public school, it's even worse because, yeah, it's a rat race there. So parents having unrealistic views of their children's abilities, how can you be honest with them? Actually, no, your child has an IQ that seems to be two deviations below mean, doesn't seem to fly very well. Actually, it's really hard because when we want to place a kid in special ed in school, man, you know you're in for a fight with the parents most of the time. That's where I go in with my, is this what you see at home? Would you like some assistance? Questions. Because if you tell a parent that their child is less than extraordinary, it's an assault. Like, I don't, okay, so realistically, some of my children are a little less than or than normal on some scales. Some of the scales are doing better, but I don't want to know that my child can't read well. My second daughter has some unique struggles. My first daughter is really good at numeracy, but struggles in a math book. I don't like that because I'm a math teacher, sort of, and that's one of my favorite subjects. So anyway, it's hard for me to think that my child be less than extraordinary in math. So, yeah, same is true of every parent. What do you guys think about that? And maybe, yeah, keep the becoming absorbed in one friendship at a time, if you want to talk about that. How can you help a kid be friends with his whole group? This brings up a kid I have right now. I've had so many talks with her parents. She is really good at some things, really good at some things, and really terrible at some others. Social emotional is bottom of the charts. Academics, well above average. And yeah, I do that. I talk about how, I mean, the parents bring it up too, but like, yeah, she does really well. I wish we had the whole child doing really well, not just the academic part. And so that can be a, and at this point, the parents actually believe me that, I believe in their child. And that she is actually really good at stuff. To begin with, they didn't believe me because they just thought I had it in for her. But every person, and let's get back to some of what we talked about earlier, every person really does have strengths. Always. Anything else on that one? Okay, so there's a whole stack. Thank you for your input, by the way. So, a couple encouraging thoughts to you as we stop. So, you're part of the solution, not the whole solution. I'm going to keep saying that. Please don't feel like you need to be the whole solution. Please don't pray. Feel like you need to pray harder in order to solve this problem. Pray. Go for it. But it's not your lack of praying harder that is keeping the problem from being solved. You're part of the solution. Jesus is part of the solution. The family's part of the solution. The child's part of the solution. Your school, board, principal is part of the solution. Care, self-care, emotional, your own emotional health is really important in helping children have emotional health. When you're too sleepy, too stressed out, too stuff like that, you're not serving your kids well. So don't try to be an overachiever when you can't be. Be realistic about that. And length of time is, in my experience, far more important than the quality of the intervention. Okay, so having the correct answer and applying it right now sometimes has a good short-lived effect. Sometimes it has a good short-lived effect. But typically, just that care over time, acting like Jesus does to us, care over time, pushing us on towards a goal, is the most effective thing. Unfortunately, that isn't a quick answer. Again, use the whole team. And yeah, that's you. That's your student. I often try to get, I didn't even talk about this much, but especially if we get older, probably fifth, sixth grade, but even younger, get the student to be part of the solution. Have them tell you what needs to change. Until you get to a teenager, they most of the time know, whether they'll be truthful or not, who knows. But they actually know what, because they do kind of want to be a normal
student, normal human being who's successful. So do include the student. Yep, use your principal, use your school board. Usually you're probably you're working directly with the principal. How many of you like have a principal that you would go to with problems versus how many of you have a school board you would go to with your problems? So how many have a principal you'd go to with your problems? Okay, and then the rest of you, school board? Okay, good. I find that that layer of principal, like most of you have, is useful. It helps to insulate between some of the political stuff. The principal that doesn't respond to your problem, I don't know what to say about that, because there are those, you know those. You might have one, or you might have had one or something. They don't think the problem's as bad as you think it is. Do make sure that they know where you're at. Be honest with them. This is making me want to stop teaching. Don't want to come back next year. Don't want to finish this year. Tell them. If they can't handle it, that's their problem. Tell them. Okay? I don't want my teachers to say that, but I do want to know that. Okay? I do. I care about knowing where my school is at. If I don't, I need to quit my job. And maybe you'll push a principal to quit their job. That's fine. That's their problem. But do make sure you're being honest with whoever you need to be honest with above you. It helps strengthen everything. And then connect with each other for support. And this is where this was just an idea I came up with fairly recently. We could start a Telegram group, so I made it already. If you guys would like to join this Telegram group, how many of you use Telegram versus like WhatsApp? And, like Telegram is okay. That's one option. There's WhatsApp. There's many other group kind of things. Telegram, I like a little better for various reasons we won't go into, including that they make links for the groups. So if you'd like to join that group, statistically, about 5% of you will. So beat the statistics. The bigger the group, the more you can help each other. I'm on some groups like that. And it's really, really useful to be able to say, this is a problem I have. You don't get answers back from your crowd necessarily, but you do get support. And maybe it's just more prayer. Maybe it is a helpful hint that does make a real difference. So there's a Telegram group you may join. I'm part of it. She's part of it because I had her number. So anyway, if you'd like to do that, feel free to use that. Like I said, statistically only 5% of you will, so whatever. It can be really useful. Feel free to share the group with your friends. You should be able to. If not, I'll fix that. Because the more people, the more perspective there is on solutions. Then, let's see. Okay, so I don't think my slides are that useful, but if you want them, you can link them there. My information's at the bottom of the sheet. If you think I can be a resource to you, feel free to reach out. I'm busy, so I might point you at another resource. But, yeah, part of why I'm here is because I believe in you guys, and I want to see you make a difference, and I want to empower you to make that difference. Please leave a review in your book. You know the review sheet? Have all of you found it yet? Please leave a review for this session. I don't care if it's bad. It's okay with me if the review is bad. But leave an honest review. That's all I care about. All right, thank you for your time and your input.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.